Just like that. Just like that. Just like that.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Coach's Box. My name is Monty and the next voice you're going to hear is Molly. Of course, we are both Hawthorn supporters, so we're a little bit in better spirits this week, Molly, although some of our fantasy teams are doing better than others, aren't they?
Oh, dear. Well, there's an old saying that a stop clock is right twice a day, so, you know.
Ooh, yeah, I deserve that. Yeah,
was,
fair enough.
It's bound to happen eventually that your side would be outperforming mine.
I looked at there's a mate of mine who I've taken a look at his side this week, and you know his side looks great. You know the structure is fantastic. You know going into the buys, which obviously we're going to talk about a fair bit tonight, but you know he's got a perfect buy structure. He hasn't got any, he's got only two of any premium in any one position, so he's got absolute. Flexibility with which he can choose where he's going to get his donuts in the buys. And you look at his team, you think, that's a pretty good team. He's set that up really well. And you look at his ranking, and he's 10,000 and something. And you think, what? I mean, if he set his team, and the reason, of course, is that, you look at his premiums, for instance, in the forwards, and he's got Cloak and Martin. Now, if he'd used the same money to get side bottom and Robinson, he'd be about 250 points better off, and he'd be up ranked where I am. Now, of course, I have both of those players. Now, if I had made that same choice, I'd be ranked in the top 200 or something. But then again, I mean, I know this is all very much, you know, Captain Hindsight, and you can say these things, but it does show how close it is at the top and how few choices can be just a little bit off, and your ranking can explode, or due to what would have seemed pre-season to be a line ball decision can go one way or the other and really go a long way, and that'll screw the rest of your season.
Yeah, I mean, I think the other one is the injuries, and have you been hit with the injuries or not?
Indeed.
And you know, Pendlebury over Swan, you know, the first couple of rounds it looked like that was a great decision to go Pendlebury, but, you know, now there's a 10-point-per-game difference, and, you know, there's a few other guys that, you know, if you've got them, that they haven't quite performed up to par or have been injured, like...
Selwood?
Selwood, Birchall in the backs, Goods missing that game with a suspension and then finally coming good and getting injured. Shaw early on, who, you know, wasn't performing very well and then went out injured as well. So, you know, there's been a few of those ones, as well as, you know, some rookie choices. So all those things add up over time.
Now, just before we get to the round review, Molly, this is the main issue in fantasy football this week is whether you want to even spend the time thinking about, or whether you think it is almost mandatory to actually do a plan of your trades all the way up to, and possibly even including the buys. Because I published one in the famous DT Coaches thread on Big Footy this week on the Dream Team board, which obviously caused some comment. But I've had some feedback from some coaches who say, what are you doing that for? It's just completely irrelevant and a waste of time, because things are going to change. And, you know, I mean, I published another one on another board a week or two ago, and of course I have changed it, you know, two or three times since then. Of course, now obviously with a goods trade that I have had to have a big rethink. But my thinking on this is that yes, it might be a waste of time. Yes, it might be something that you will not, you know, adhere to. The six trades that you might plan in the next 5 weeks might never have any chance of coming to fruition, but I think it the actual act of making a plan sort of helps your thinking to be more structured, so that when you do come time to change the plan, at least you have a structure of doing it rather than making it up from week to week. So where do you stand on that one?
Oh yeah, I mean I did it last year where I had a plan. I had my team. I had numerous plans that would change week to week and used, you know, what if I went, you know, this way, or what if I went that way, You know, where would it leave me 3 weeks down the track or 4 weeks down the track or getting to my best side? What would happen if I had to do this? I think the secret is not being... wedded to the plan. If you do that, then yeah, of course it's going to be bad, because if someone changes how they're performing or the likes, then if you're not willing to change because that's my plan, then that's bad. But if you just map out where you're going, and especially with the buys this year, that's something I've got to do in the next few weeks, is work that out. I keep looking at my side and trying to picture it in my head, and even with the footynerd.com bookmarklet, you can see it a bit, but yeah, just getting in your head that, you know, if you've got all these round 11 guys and you're going to trade them out, then, you know, that whole buy structure changes for you.
I think there are certain players who sort of represent this issue. That, I mean, a lot of people are talking about trading out Magna, for instance, and it is actually fairly counterproductive for certain sides with certain structures of buys to actually trade him out, because that means you're either going to eat a donut fairly soon in the buy period if your structure of round 12 centres is not tickety-boo. So, I mean, it might be a much better option to trade out one of the Giants. I mean, even though they might have smaller break-evens than Magna does, that's the sort of decision that a planning will ensure that you don't make the wrong decision for, and ensure you minimise your donuts for. I suppose the other issue is, I mean, I have seen sides that are, you know, as perfectly balanced as the one I mentioned there before, and I've seen other sides that are just way unbalanced, and it's sort of like some coaches seem to take the attitude that they don't care at all about the buys. I saw one side this week where they had 6 round 11 centres and 2 round 12 ones and 0 round 13 ones. Now that's a bit too unbalanced, I would have thought, and that reflects not only because the two of those, I mean, I think there was 4 Giants and then they had Scott Thompson and Matthew Boyd. Now that smacks to me of lack of planning from the beginning, and this is it's probably a bit late to rescue that sort of thing now, and you're going to be spending that bloke is going to be spending at least 4 if not 5 trades to get anywhere near a workable buy structure. But I think this planning thing started in the pre-season, and those coaches who did plan are going to hopefully minimise their exposure to risk and damage through the buys, and those who didn't, some of those guys might get lucky and think that they're, well, you know, guys or girls might get lucky and think that they're justified, but the vast majority of them are going to get burnt by it, I think, Molly.
Yeah, no, I agree, and I mean, that's the trick. It's going to be how we work it through and having a bit of a plan, and I think you worked out what the minimum is. Is it 3 donuts if you played everything perfectly that you'd have to wear?
It's two at the moment. You would have to eat 2 donuts because of the ruck structure. So because you're going to have 2 weeks where you actually have emergencies in the rucks. So, I mean, like, for instance, if you've got Cox and Giles and Redden and Stevenson, in the first week you'd be playing Redden and Stevenson, theoretically. Of course, you know, we don't know who they're going to play, but let's just say they're all playing. You'd play those two, and you have Cox and Giles on the bench. In round 12, I think it's Stevenson who is on the bye, but the other 3 are all playing. Now, the thing with the byes is, every time you've got an emergency in one position, that means you've got a donut somewhere else. So that means that because you've got... who was that I said? Not Stevenson, the other bloke, Redden. Because you've got Redden as an a theoretically playing emergency, that means you're going to have a donut somewhere else that week. Or at least somewhere else in the structure. Doesn't necessarily have to be in that round 12, it might be round 11 or 13. You might have 2 donuts in round 13, you might have 2 in round 11, however it's structured. But you are going to have to eat minimum two donuts. And of course, the way that the rucks are going, you're probably going to have to eat, 6 donuts because... Is that 6? No, that's actually 4, because you're probably not going to have... I mean, for instance, if you did have Cox and Giles both on the bench in round 11, you're probably not going to have Stevenson or Redden playing for you in round 11 either, so that's another 2 donuts. But then again, everyone's going to eat those 2 donuts, so I don't think it really matters that much.
Yeah.
All right.
No, I mean, it's going to be tricky. It is going to be tricky and a plan. I mean, I think buyers are here to stay. And I think, you know, a planning tool. I mean, I know myself, I've got a little app I use to update the website. And that's something I'm going to, when I've got the players sorted out for it, I'm going to try and work out if there's some way I can build my own planning system in there so I can see myself and do it. And I mean, I think the other point I made in that thread was that if you are going to use a plan, be conservative with your valuations you put in. Always overestimate how much a premium is going to rise by a little bit, and always underestimate what a cash cow is going to go up.
Yeah,
because that way you're always going to be happy.
We should specify that this is the sort of the part of the fantasy season where it is very important that you're all over what the expected rise and fall of various prices is, and that means either you get FF Genie or you get obviously Too Serious on the go. I'm not sure. Do they have that in the virtual sports products? You know, the DT assistant coach, etc.
Yeah, so they have break evens, and then they have projected scores.
Right. But they don't have
projected. Then they show what the projected price rise will be compared to that.
So, but that's score. That's for 1 week though.
No, for the rest of the season.
The rest of the season. Well, that's what we're talking about. So this is something that was, I think, pioneered by FF Genie, and I think Too Serious might have come after it. And of course, that's obviously what now Virtual Sports have done with DT Assistant Coach and also Supercoach Gold.
Yeah. I would like to throw, you know, I'm glad you mentioned Too Serious, because I do like one of their features of being able to plug in what you think the scores will be, yep, and then it recalculates things.
Yeah. Yep. Now, look, all of those things are very valuable, and of course, you know, people will have spreadsheets, and they'll probably do the same sort of thing in their spreadsheets, and that's the wonders of fantasy football. That's why people get obsessed over it, because you can, you know, work all these things to your heart's content and spend hours over it, and I certainly have over the last week or so. Trying to get the numbers right and the buys right to maximise or minimise the risk going through the buys. And I'm sure a lot of people also will be doing that this week, obviously over the next 2 or 3 weeks. So you have done one of those, Molly, yourself?
Not this year. I have done it in the past. Mm. I did it last year quite heavily, and like, I did it in a spreadsheet, and I set it up once, and then when I wanted to change, you know, run through two scenarios, I'd make a copy of the sheet and work it out that way and decide which one at the end of the round that I kept and go from there.
So I don't know if you've been following the sort of logic that the line of thinking I've been doing through that thread. I have sort of started off with a plan which minimised the donuts, but over time, like I've done two or three of them now, I have started cutting out unnecessary trades, and I think my last plan, I'm not sure, I don't think I actually published it on the DT, on the Big Footy thread, but the latest plan I've got actually deliberately adds 2 donuts to my buy period, but I save, I think it's 2 or 3 trades, and I end up, my first plan was to have 6 trades at the end of the buy period for the last 10 rounds. I think my current one actually leaves me with 9, which I'm much more happy with, but I eat those 2 extra donuts. So, I mean, this is something which I'm thinking that a lot of coaches will start doing, especially because right at the moment there is the potential for having a 3 or 4 week window where you would have a certain player, you'd trade him in and back out again, and I feel like that's the sort of thing where, or at least you have the potential to do that. I feel like that's the sort of thing where you can say, well, okay, let's just forget those 2 trades, eat a few, lesser points and maybe a donut or two, and I can probably make that back towards the end of the season, because I'm assuming that things are going to be pear-shaped, especially with the team's resting, you know, premiums late. So I feel like that's the sort of thing which a lot of people will be doing, and that's certainly something that I'm thinking of doing at the moment.
Yeah. No, I think there's a lot of merit in that as well, as having a few extra trades at the end of the year.
All right, now before we get to the round review, as was last week, this show is sponsored by sportsteals.com.au. That is sportsteals, that is S-P-O-R-T-S-T-E-A-L-S.com.au. And it is a daily deal site. I think the deal up there now I can see for Victoria is only $49.95 for an EPL Chelsea men's home jersey. Do not pay over 100 nicker, they say. Of course, Chelsea didn't win the league this year, but of course they did win the FA Cup, so that is an FA Cup winning jersey, that one. I think they've just updated their ad on Fan Footy this week. Subscribe now for a chance to win a $500 voucher. So I think you can actually subscribe and get daily emails about the new deal that's on that day. I think they've got Nike and Adidas and a bunch of other. I think obviously that one is an Adidas one, that Chelsea one. So I believe there's a lot of deals going on there. As we said last week, you can get referral money. I think it's $5 per referral for referring friends to the service. So there's a lot of deals there at sportsdeals.com.au, and I believe that's the last week of the sponsorship for this at this point, Molly. But I'm sure that we'll get many others, because of course we do have the best live reads in fantasy football podcasts in the country, we can assure you. Anyway, we'll get on to the round review now. Of course, we start with the Bulldogs game against Collingwood on the Friday night. Now, there are two sets of issues. Basically, they're the same issue, but they're on different sides here. So the two, injuries to halfbacks, Easton Wood on the Bulldogs side and Ben Johnson on the Collingwood side. Now, Woods is only, I think, a four-weeker. Now, was it 4 to 6 weeks? It was a broken bone, I believe. Ben Johnson, of course, is out for the whole season. So the question, Molly, is obviously Wood. You look at the Dogs' injury list, and I think they have, at the moment, they have Markovic. They have Wood, obviously. They have at least three others. Dale Morris, of course, has had a recurrence. He's had a setback with his, and he'll be out for an extended period now. And there's two others there who I can't remember off the top of my head who are out there. So I mean, you look at their best back six, and you'd say you'd have Lake and Austin in the spine at the moment. And probably the halfbacks would be Murphy and Hargrave, and you have Addison in the back pocket. And then you're looking at other back pocket, which previously would have been in. You think, who the hell is actually fit that they're actually going to be able to play? Because they just haven't got the cattle there at the moment. I mean, I think they tried, was it in the preseason or one of the early games, they actually tried rotating the half forwards through the back line, which they might have to do. They might have to get a Higgins or even a Dalhouse. He rotated there through there in one of the early games. The issue there for the Dogs, first of all, is, I mean, Lake and Hargrave being the fantasy relevant players, it probably hurts Hargrave more than it does Lake. But I feel like Hargrave's numbers have been coming from sort of these really late in quarter sort of chippy stuff, sort of stuff that you'll probably get regardless. But do you think it's going to hurt either Lake or Hargrave scores with Wood being out for an extended period?
I don't think it's Lake. I don't think Lake will be hurt by it. He seems to, he's almost benefited when he's playing against the better players that the ball's going to come to him, because he normally does do okay against them. It's more when teams try and take him out of the game that he loses points. So yeah, I think Hargrave could be negatively affected by having more responsibility. Having Higgins back there is an interesting idea that maybe, apart from his injury concerns and the fact that going to the back line seems to be the curse there at the Bulldogs, could be an interesting for him to possibly, get a few more points than he is now if he can get involved in a little bit of that chippy as well.
Of course, now I've got the injury list up here. Now, the three I did forget, so it was Morris, indefinite, Wood 3 weeks with a hamstring, and Markovic is a test with his hamstring. The other three I was forgetting, of course, was Tom Williams, who's still out for another 7 weeks with his shoulder. Lindsay Gilbey, who's another 2 weeks with his knee. And, of course, Christian Howard, who has played a bit of... at least he's certainly... I believe he's listed as a back, and I'm not sure he plays there all that much, but certainly he's out... He's listed as a test with a knee as well. So their back line in general is looking very sick and sorry. Now, on the other side of that game, Molly, of course, Ben Johnson has been shut down for the year with his continually subluxed shoulder. So I believe one of the coaches might have even been Buckley himself, specified Simon Buckley as the replacement for Ben Johnson on their half back line. Now, I'm not necessarily sure that Johnson played true traditional half back, so Perhaps it's a bit of a dud comparison, but the apparently the structure is going to be served by Buckley stepping into Johnson's shoes. Now, I think Johnson might have missed a couple of games to start off with, and Buckley might have played anyway, so he might have been playing that role anyway. So, I mean, obviously Johnson and Buckley, I don't think themselves are fantasy relevant at this point, but, of course, the players who are fantasy relevant are Marty Clark and Heath Shaw. So the same question with Lake and Hargrave, does the Johnson injury hurt their fantasy relevance?
I think Clark's could be because he's been asked to do a few more roles, and you know, after his Anzac Day performance against Stanton, he's done a good job at them, and so it's likely that he'll continue to get those roles, which isn't sort of good for his scoring. But I think Heath Shaw, you know, he's returned from that injury and you know, he's put up a pretty good score to start with. So I think he'll be better off in the long run that Clark has stepped up and started to take some roles. So he may be able to return to more his normal ball-getting type behaviour.
Mm. Well, certainly delivered a nice score against the Bulldogs on Friday night, Heath Shaw did, and it was noticeable that, I mean, Marty Clark's had a decent score, but Buckley also had a decent score. But of course, the knock with Buckley is his kicking, and certainly he's one of those players you love to hate, Molly. Of course, the player who has a terrible Supercoach score, or you know, champion data ranking points score compared to his dream team, which does underline his lack of disposal quality, but. Yes, all right, we'll move on to the Essendon and Brisbane game. Now, of course, the big story here was Brent Stanton with his 193, which, of course, has been trumpeted by the Dream Team people as a record. Of course, it was a record during the life of Dream Team. I'm not sure it's actually a record for the competition, because I think Wayne Carey might have... of course, there was Jason Dunstall back in the day. Molly, I don't know whether you... I was certainly there that day that he kicked 17 against poor old Richmond. But anyway, as far as the actual modern-day Dream Team, I think he might have beaten Brian Lake's score by a point. There was a list on the Fantasy Freako newsletter today detailing that. Now, the question is... I'm hearing a lot of people talking about Brent Stanton and Dyson Heppel as trade-in targets, and of course, you know, you'd love them to be scoring anywhere near the numbers they got in that Brisbane game. But I feel like there's actually a bit of a difference between these two. I don't like Brent Stanton's price. He's priced at, you know, 115 or more, and I feel like that's probably the average he's going to get for the rest of the season. Whereas, with Heppel, he's priced at 85, and I feel like he's going to meet or outscore that. So, I feel like Heppel is better value for money, and I'm actually getting Heppel in myself this week. Whereas Stanton, I don't think I'll be touching, because I think he's way overpriced at the moment. He's got two big scores going through, you know, rotating through his price, and I feel like he's overpriced. Even though, I mean, I know a lot of coaches like to get the top six, but I feel like he's gone already. If he was going to be worthwhile getting, I think the time has passed. And I don't feel like there's a particular need to get him over someone like, obviously, Gary Ablett Jr. So, are you with me on those two, that Stanton is overpriced and Heppel is underpriced?
Yeah, well, I mean, Stanton's averaging 135 now with that 193. So, his last three games have been 175, 77, 193. So, you would think they're sort of the best scores he's going to have for the season, some of those scores. So it can only be down from here, which is what's going to put you off him. I think other teams are going to start keying in on him with such amount of ball use that you just can't let him do that anymore, you know. And as they've sort of talked about during the week, his disposal has improved to some degree, so you know, I think more teams will choose to tag him than let him run free. So you know, he's gonna start, his scores are gonna drop, because I think it's fair to say that he hasn't handled the tags as well as other players have.
I can absolutely see either Adam Selwood or Patrick McGinnity going to him this week, and him putting out another 70 like he did in the Anzac Day game. I can absolutely see that. I'm not sure. I mean, his draw really, you know, opens up, and then in the I mean, obviously the Tigers, GWS, of course, and then of course Melbourne after that. So it's a pretty decent draw after that. The Swans just before the bye, but certainly I can see him, you know, delivering you a fairly pants score next week against the Eagles.
Now, I mean, you say the GWS, but in a way, I mean, Bug and McDonald have done fair jobs on the opposition's best midfielders. They haven't been running as right as much as maybe players did last year against Gold Coast, don't you think? So,
well, I think I'm not necessarily sure that it's necessarily the tagging jobs. I think that's actually the premiums. Like, Boyd is probably a main example, and Murphy on the weekend. They just don't seem to care. They just sort of wander around, and they let the lesser lights have their day in the sun. And they just sort of have almost a day off. They sort of just wander around the countryside, you know, enjoying the view, and don't necessarily work as hard as they would in a quote-unquote real game. And that seems to be... Now, yeah. I'm not sure whether Stanton's got that attitude, but certainly the attitude I've sort of picked up from the likes of, as I say, Boyd and Mark Murphy in their GWS games.
Yeah, I mean, there's just something there that they're not scoring as well as you would expect for these gun... premiums type thing that they just haven't done it. So, you know, I don't know that we can say that these guys are gonna absolutely have the types of performances we think that they have in the past.
Now, what about Heppel? You on board with me? You know, him being value for money.
Well, look, I mean, I think he's gonna be around about the mark.
I feel like people are going to be choosing between either Heppel or Shaw. So, if you have that choice, which one would you be going for at the moment?
I probably would go Shaw because of experience and the likes. Although, you know, Heppel did it last year and he's doing it again this year, so...
I think a lot of fantasy coaches have had the experience with Heath Shaw that he's let them down. And I don't think Heppel's let anyone down yet.
That's true as well, and I mean... That's the thing about it. He has missed games in the past. So, I might slip back to Heppel rather than Shaw. I'm not sure there's a lot of options. I mean, the other one probably too in that round 12 bye is Enright. Not sure if we're going to talk about him today, but I think we are going to talk about him a bit later. But he would be another one in that round 12 category where it's, you know... Are they the sorts of guys that you're going to pick?
All right, on the Brisbane side of that game, Molly, a couple of players we've been talking about a lot, and I think this is actually going to be the last time we're going to talk about them, Mitchell Golby and Pierce Hanley. I feel like if you've suffered through their season, and it hasn't been... They've had that one good game against the GWS. They were a couple of players who did enjoy themselves against... Gold Coast, I should say. Against Gold Coast... in the Q Clash a couple of weeks ago, those tons have rotated twice through their scores, and now they're going to be rotating out. And of course, their break evens reflect that, and their break evens is pretty much either above or at what their scoring is. And it has to be said, their scoring does not befit a premium. So I feel like this is the week to get off the bandwagon with both of these guys, Molly. I mean, I believe are you still a Golby owner? Because I think, is it time to get off it, or is it the case, as I suspect with a lot of coaches, that they're looking to other parts of their team with more pressing issues than these two?
Yeah, and I mean, I've had that more pressing issue type thing via the Goods injury. I mean, until Goods got injured, I had planned to trade out Golby this week to a Shaw, probably, or Enright were my initial thoughts. But with the Goods injury, I want to get him out this week, and because the player that I'm picking up could go up in price. I'm looking at Dane Beams. I haven't got him. So I'm going to get him, and then the other trade I'm making this week is to get Horsley in, assuming he plays. There was some talk today that he mightn't play, that he might have to make way for others coming back.
No, surely not.
Well, I didn't hear that, but someone told me on Twitter that McKenna was on SEN this morning. He might have mentioned there that he might have But don't take that with a grain of salt. I mean, we're going to see it beforehand. So
absolutely.
If he sort of makes way, then that will open up the chance to trade out Golby this week. But otherwise, I could be stuck with him for another week.
Surely not. I mean, 25 disposals and 10 tackles in his second game. You don't drop that after two games, surely. He's just McKenna. Anyway.
Stranger things have happened with those young sides.
Yeah, I suppose. Geelong and Melbourne on the Saturday afternoon. I saw a few coaches saying, right, we'll have to get Steve Donaldson in for this one. He's gonna have a massive one because, of course, he did the last time these two played. I was a bit sceptical about that, but, of course, it did come true. This is one of those cases where you expect a premium to deliver against a much lesser opponent, and Steve Johnson, of course, not quite as good as last time, but you wouldn't expect that. 160 plus in both competitions. Perfectly respectable bounce back to form. And it means that his averages for the year are now up to somewhere near respectable numbers. His super coach has been well down this year, but his dream team certainly has been obviously down from his 107 average in both competitions last year. But is this going to be the game that kickstarts his season? Well, this is the question. He's underpriced, and I feel like a lot of coaches are going to be getting him in this week because they do feel he's underpriced. Where do you see his average, given that he is priced at about 90? In both competitions, where do you see his average being for the rest of the year?
Oh, he'll absolutely get up to the 100, 105s from here on in. I guess the worry is Geelong are renowned for giving players a rest outside of the bye rounds. They don't really have... They've got a pretty tough end of the season draw, and you would think it's going to be a lot tighter at the top this year than it has in previous years, but you could absolutely see him missing maybe around 10 or 15 against the Gold Coast and GWS. So that's a bit of a worry. But I think he's still going to be really good value if you can find a way to get him in this week.
Yep. I mean, Steve Johnson priced at 90. You'd take that in a heartbeat, I'd reckon. I mean, his price is deflated by a couple of those 60s in the first 3 weeks, but... yeah, I mean, those coaches who got him in last week, they're laughing, and good luck to them. Absolutely about that. Now, the aforementioned Corey Enright, Molly, I believe it was no lesser a guru than Dr. Dream Team recommended Corey Enright this week, which obviously gives me pause for thought. But an average of 71 in Dream Team, Supercoach 89, which is obviously much more respectable, but has dropped in price markedly over the course of the season so far, based mostly on his terrible performance in the first game against Frio, and a pretty poor one last week, obviously in the torrential rain against the Lions. But it was his first ton in Dream Team this year, this season, against of course, the Hapless Demons. I don't like Geelong's draw. I have to say I'm happy with not having any Cats in my side at the moment, and I feel like I'm going to keep it that way. I feel like Enright is, you know, past his use by date as a fantasy player, and I mean if I'm looking for a someone in the 12s, I'll be looking for a pie, I think, at this stage.
Yeah, I mean that's the one to work out is do you go with the cat or the pie in this case? Enright, I mean, he's proven it before, but then again he's getting on towards the end of his career. So do you go with the younger guys, as we say, the Hepples and to a lesser degree Shaw? That's something we're going to have to work out with that. And even the Dockers, Broughton or Duffield, maybe think about, maybe not. You know, it's a bit of a trick, but I think I strongly considered getting in Enright this week. I guess the idea that he might be rested is another worry, but yeah, I mean, most of those back guys do have a little bit of concern to them.
Yep.
And that's what we've seen over the years.
Yep. All right. Now, just to round out that as far as the other end of the scoring chart was this week now, Billy Smits, he is still priced at under 120 in Dream Team and under 130 in Supercoach due to that four rotating through his price from the Lions game. But he had his he had a 50 in Dream Team this week with a Supercoach score of 42. I feel like, I mean, play it was obviously you'd be looking at him versus Spur this week. And I feel like, obviously, you know, Smits is past the bubble, but due to that bubble game being that four against the Lions, his price is going to be somewhere thereabouts for the next 2 weeks. So I feel like it's a bit of a choice between Smits and Spur. I feel like most people are still going Spur in that case. Obviously, we'll talk about Spur himself later on, but can you make a case for Smits over Spur in that little battle?
Well, I mean, you can at the moment because his job security may be a little bit better. I mean, Spur's just in. He started with the red vest. Perhaps Smits is going to be a better option in that sense that, you know, he's played, you know, four games already. So he had one bad one, but he's had a few other games. So if you were desperate to get one of those two in, maybe Smets is the better option.
I know. I haven't actually got Spur down on the running sheet. I'm probably going to leave him for next week. So I might as well talk about him here now. I mean, the thing with Spur was that he was mentioned amongst the best by Ross Lyon. So Ross Lyon, evidently, the coach of Fremantle, evidently likes Spur. But then, of course, we have that. I mean, this is that old furphy that we've been relying on for as far as information on Smets, which of course was Steve Johnson saying in an interview in the preseason that he was going to play that Smets was going to play 15 games. So he's played what's that, 4 out of 5 now, is that right, or 5 out of 6 now?
Yep,
4 out of 5. So I mean, he's certainly on target for that sort of game time. So I don't think either of them are going to be a bad choice. I don't think either of them are going to be sensational or you know they're going to be bench fodder at best, but I hope they will not go wrong with either of them at this stage. But they're going to be a warm body, put it that way. I guess the question is, are they going to play through the byes, Molly? I think Smets actually probably has a better chance of playing all the way through the byes. Would you agree with that?
Who was that, Smets? Smets. Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, I think so.
I think it's a bit more dicey in Freo, although you know they're getting a few injuries again this year, so that could play into it.
True. All right. Of course, I was going to mention the other sub story as far as the Geelong rookies goes. Of course, you know Guthrie had the same problem that Smets did. Came on as a sub for Bartell. Had only 3 possessions and saluted with a 10 in Dream Team and a 9 in Supercoach. Again, much like Smets, that has pretty much killed off his fantasy cash generation, because his break even is 77 in Dream Team and 84 in Supercoach, which is he hasn't reached that in any of his 6 games so far. So is now the time to get rid of him?
If you've got him, it would be time to get rid of him. Yeah, I mean, you'd be looking on from that. The interesting thing could be, I mean, I'm looking at his price is 200 and a break even of 77. Could see a bit of a dip the next 2 weeks. Perhaps he might come back into a downgrade target if you consider that 10 is a one-off and his other scores are sort of half all right, you know.
I could actually see Guthrie down to Smets at this stage. As far as job security goes, Wojcinski is obviously out for 4 weeks, which helps both of these guys. I could see one down to the other at this stage.
Yeah, I mean, that's absolutely a possibility. Mm.
All right, we'll move on to the Gold Coast and Fremantle game. Now, I mean, look, Harley Bunnell was very, very nice to watch, but I'm not sure he's necessarily a fantasy-relevant player. So I suppose the real question for me, Molly, from this game was not anyone who actually played in that game. It was about Gary Ablett Jr., and it was mentioned by the aforementioned Guy McKenna, who's turning into a bit of a fantasy antichrist at the moment, because he's mentioned that apparently he's had talks with Gary Ablett Jr. about playing more forward this year. Now, this is a bit of an issue. Oh, hang on. Have I missed one in the Melbourne game? I have missed it, haven't I? Hmm. All right, let's put the show in reverse for a second. I did miss out on the on talking about the Melbourne player, and that of course is James Magner. Now, I suppose the issue with Magner is that again, as we talked about in the before the round review, is that yes, his break even is creeping up towards his average, but I feel like the reason that I'm keeping him, and a lot of other coaches will keep him, is because of the buy structure. So I suppose the question to you, Molly, is can you see his job security, meaning he's going to stay in that team until all the way through the buys, or are we kidding ourselves that he's going to be that durable and that and going to stick in that side, given the way that they're losing every week? Seems to be, there's probably more pain to come in terms of selection for Melbourne players, because they just keep on losing, and they're losing. That was a relatively honourable loss against Geelong, but every couple of weeks they put in the absolute shocker, and they could do again this week, and then they could make five changes, and Magner could be one of them. Because I'm not necessarily sure that those of us who are keeping Magner are making the right choice.
Oh, I think he's pretty safe. I mean, his performances have been pretty good in themselves. I mean, the only worry is if, they think that he needs a rest for his first AFL season. But being a mature-age rookie, you wouldn't think that would be a problem. You'd think he'd be trying to play as many games as he can to make up for the time that he's lost where he wasn't in the league. So, he's had some horrific-looking injuries early in the season, and they haven't put him out. I mean, I think he's going to be pretty safe. I mean, they're using him in a lot of different roles. I mean, I'm reading fan footy here where it says that he tagged Scarlett, in that game. So, that's another role for him. His tag midfield is he's got the ball himself, and he's now doing forward tags. I think he's a pretty versatile player that, I don't think Melbourne have the players to push him out of the side. It'll only be if he is rested at some point. And coming to the bye rounds, why would you rest him unless you wanted to give him a 2-week rest rather than a 1-week rest?
Mm. Well, we had to talk about Magner because there's no one really else I wanted to talk about, and I just basically didn't want to talk about Tom Couch again. I mean, another 30 touches in BOG in the Magoos. I mean, what does he have to do? What does the boy have to do anyway? Right, anyway, as I was saying about Abbott Jr. before I was so really interrupted by my own incompetence, this is why, I mean, we don't have a live chat today because Ustream is not playing nice, so we're not actually broadcasting the show live, so I'm a bit discombobulated by the lack of...
I think it's back, by the way.
Is it? Oh, well, too late now, but anyway. It'll probably go down again in 5 minutes, that's what it's been doing the last 3 or 4 hours. But anyway, so, Gary Abbott Jr., talk of him starting forward. I feel like we had this same conversation about Gary Abbott Jr. 2 or 3 years ago at Geelong, Molly. And that never seemed to... Well, A, it never really happened. And B, when he did go forward, he scored just as well as he used to. So is this just a bit of a... I feel like it's a bit of a furphy. I'm not worried about this at all. What about you?
No, I mean, I'm not as worried about it as I have been in the past, early in the season if it had to come up, because I got rid of him. But apart from that, I mean... Yeah, he does score well. He does kick goals. I mean, I think a lot of media commentators are drooling at the idea that, late in his career he could turn into a full forward and can he do what his dad did?
Mm.
But, I mean, he's going to get... I mean, these days, especially a forward of his size, he's not going to stay up for, in the deep forward area where, he could get starved of the ball. He's going to be on the flank... pushing up, getting marks and the like. So, yeah, he's good enough to maintain his scoring, score a few goals and just maybe drop off a little bit, but not enough to really have you worried, I would have thought.
Mm. Now, I didn't put Kyle Horsley on the running sheet because, I mean, do we need to talk about him? He could be the first, I believe he'd be the first player just to gain 100,000 in Dream Team in price in a single week. If he scores 103 this week, so I mean, there's no point of about talking about him. He's going to be in everyone's sides pretty much. And if you don't get him in, you got rocks in your head. Put it that way.
Did Barlow do it?
I meant to go look that up. I forgot to go look that up, but he would have come close if not get there. But anyway, on the Fremantle side, now we talked about Spur a little bit, but I guess the question for me the story for me here was Matthew Pavlich, because finally I managed to. I've had him in my Supercoach side, and I've been sort of struggling with his numbers. He had managed a Supercoach ton for the year, and he managed a big 150 in that game. He's had a couple of games where, I think two or three games, where he's had a pretty poor first three quarters, but he's really lifted in the last quarter, and certainly in that game, and I think the previous game also against the Blues. Was it the Blues? Or the, yeah, it might have been the Blues. The Blues, he pretty much put in a 50-point performance in that last quarter against the Blues as well, and the, where they almost beat them. But, of course, he did score about 90-odd of those 148 Supercoach points in that last quarter with a big big last quarter performance to lift the Dockers over the line. And I feel like he's actually turned into a Supercoach specialist at this point, Molly, because he just hasn't got the accumulation, the tank to accumulate like he always has. But I feel like he's sort of playing within himself and just doing enough to get Fremantle over the line in a lot of these games. And that is very much a Supercoach type, game style is what I'm saying. So I feel like he's a Supercoach specialist. But can you make a case for him, given that he has had a couple of DT tons in the last two weeks? Can you make a case for him to get anywhere near the top seven in the forwards by the end of the year?
Oh, I mean, he's a quality player, and he could absolutely get there. He's apart from a 67, a 72, 75, you know, he's been up and down has been the problem so far, but if he's starting to get used to that role that he's playing and really hitting his straps, then, you know, he's got the potential to do it. He's still got to play Melbourne twice. He's still got the Giants, Port, you know, Richmond, North. Actually Port twice, so they've got some good games to come. But yeah, I think that there's an argument to look at him as a player who can be close to the top 10 or top 7 and could be worth it for the money from here on in.
Mm. I mean, he was one of the ones who I chose as, you know, in my pre-season predilection towards centre half forwards. Obviously, you know, this wing makes it all better, as obviously with Steve Johnson. But I think people probably would be, if they're looking for a dedicated forward, they'd be looking at Johnson rather than Pavlich this week. But certainly that's a choice for later on.
Just on those scores, he scored 37 and 42 in this third and fourth quarter in DT, and 37 and 87 in Supercoach this week. So
that's it. Yep,
all right. I remember I was at the Hawks game watching, you know, the scores on the old phone and thinking, oh, you beaut, you know, anyone who's got him, it's going to be, you know, down a bit, but just put up some big scores late.
Yep. All right, the St Kilda Hawthorn game. Now, Nick Riewoldt and Lee Montagna, they were, you know, they have been premiums in previous years, you know, two or three years ago, everyone had them in their side. I feel like they're, again, a bit like we were talking about Enright there before. I feel like their fantasy usefulness has dwindled away with these two. Montagna especially. I mean, he had a decent game in that game, I thought, and still only didn't manage to get 80 in either competition. And Riewoldt, despite the fact he was playing on everyone's favourite witch's hat, Ryan Schoenmaker's Molly, still didn't manage a DT ton. Did a fine job, but I think there was a highlight made by David King on AFL Insider on Tuesday that it was actually Stanley is starting to do the sort of work that Riewoldt had been doing of, you know, running up the ground and running back and, you know, getting on the end of these sort of goals. There was one particular passage of play where Stanley started in the halfback flank and ran, you know, all the way through to the goals and was on the end of a kick, you know, 40 metres out and ran. It was very much a Riewoldt play, and it was obviously highlighted by David King as a Riewoldt-type play. The only problem, of course, is that for owners of Nick Riewoldt, why the hell is Nick Riewoldt doing that? I feel like, Riewoldt's... maybe his tank is sputtered out and he's not going to be able to do the sort of things that gets him big DT tons or big Supercoach scores anymore. And obviously with Montagna, his fantasy relevance is almost completely shot to hell. I can't see him getting anywhere near the top six in the future. I think, you know, obviously Goddard and Hayes are very much relevant, but I don't think Riewoldt or Montagna are.
No, Montagna just isn't really scoring what he needs to. He's playing out of the square a little bit more than he probably has in the past, so that's hurting him. And as you say, Riewoldt's not putting up the big scores. He's starting to look old and knocked around. I mean, he's kicked 3 goals, 2 on the weekend, but just didn't have the marks that he normally does. So that's a worry. The only sort of real value I sort of looked earlier in the season, trying to see, you know, strategies and the likes, was if you are going to be someone who's doing sideways trades and you don't have many round 13 guys in your forward line, that, you know, he has Richmond, Gold Coast and Adelaide in those bye rounds, around the bye rounds. So, you know, if you are thinking of that, you will do sideways trades, you could possibly get one of those round 11 GWS rookies out for him for just the 3 week period where perhaps he can put up some good scores. But that's the only relevance that I can see at the moment, unless he, you know, really returns to form in the next few weeks.
Mm. All right.
I mean, if he looks like he's going to return to form, he's going to be, you know, a way underpriced player.
All right, on to Hawk Talk, Molly. We are going to have Hawk Talk this week because obviously the Hawks did some fantasy relevant things. Now, give us the Lance
Buddy. There's no one in the chat to complain about.
No, exactly. Now, give us your thoughts on Lance Franklin and his interaction with your team, Molly. Because of course you didn't start with him. He has dropped 65,000 in Dream Team, 76,000 in Supercoach. Still has a break even of 113 and 114. Dropped again this week. Now, am I to understand that you're thinking of actually getting in this week, or did you get him in last week?
After having an 1800 score, I was so disgusted I brought him in last week instead of Stevie J. I'm a little bit sad about that, and probably even sadder about it with the goods problem. So that would have seen him back in as well. But, I mean, he put up 105. He's looking good. Lots of shots. Not kicking as many as you'd like. But, you know, my prediction at the start of the season was that first 6 weeks of the year, and it's turned out pretty reasonable. You might be able to tag on Melbourne to that because they've got Frawley who can do it, but I think their midfield's going to be such that they won't be able to hold on to him as much as they might. So I think he's got a good run coming up.
But, well, yeah, I mean, you look at the draw, and of course, you know, the Hawks have been whinging about the draw, and it certainly has been a fairly tough one, but it really opens up now the next 6 weeks. You know, the Demons, Dockers, Tigers, North, Port and Lions. That is potentially six bottom. What is it now? Bottom 10 sides in that
yeah,
six.
So I mean, Melbourne have Frawley who has done reasonable jobs on him in the past, and the Dockers have McFarlane and Dawson who could give him issues. But you know, both those two he could still get after. And if he does that, then the other four, you know, who knows what's going to happen with those ones. And then he's still got Gold Coast and GWS in the second half of the season.
Wasn't it Dawson who punched his tooth out, or was that Ruffey that he punched his tooth out? Don't you remember Dawson punching one of their teeth out?
Yes, well, I wondered whether he was wearing a... because it's famously he wasn't wearing a mouth guard for that incident. So I was wondering whether he was wearing a mouth guard when he got that... hip and shoulder around the head area on the weekend.
Look, if I was Zach Dawson, I'd be wearing a mouth guard in the forthcoming game because he might cop it a bit. But anyway, now I am a Grant Birchall owner, Molly, and of course I did start him in that game and was disappointed with a 60. Now I suppose there's two sides of this question. His current owners, are we going to be pleasantly surprised by these next 6 weeks of these? The so-called lesser teams that we're going to be playing against, as in me and Birch, you know. But obviously the other question is, if you didn't have Birchall, would you be looking at him as a very much underpriced upgrade target because of that 6 week break, you know, raft of lesser teams coming up?
Yeah, absolutely. I think he's a gun, and I mean, as long as he can get that fitness right, he'll be scoring well. He takes a lot of marks from opposition kicks and the likes, a lot of chipping around. you know, they're going to come good, and you know, he's going to score well as well, you know, in that time frame. So I think they've got Melbourne at the MCG on Friday night. The weather's not too bad. Frio in Tassie, I think, and then Richmond will be at the G, and North, I think, is in Tassie. So, you know, some good games coming up where he should be able to get some good stats. Not many marks on the weekend really hurt his score, so hopefully they can rectify that in the coming weeks.
All right. We've got the Sydney-Adelaide game. Now, of course, Adam Goods. Well, first of all, with Adam Goods, I actually heard one coach say today they might actually think about keeping him on the bench. First of all, that's crazy talk, isn't it? Crazy. Surely he wouldn't keep that much money on the bench for 6 weeks.
No, I mean, it's 6 weeks, you know, which will be five games and then the bye and then come back against Geelong. So, you know, I think that's not the best option. I mean, I would rather get him out and, you know, if you like him that much, potentially look to get him in again at round 13 for one of your round 12 sideways trades.
Mm. And the other thing, of course, about this is that I'm seeing a lot of coaches looking up from Goods to the likes of Beams or Sidebottom or Robinson, obviously the, you know, the top three forwards, whichever of those they don't have. And I feel I'm not seeing a whole lot of coaches looking down to Ryan O'Keefe, also in that side. Has done nothing wrong the last couple of weeks. Has obviously moved from from outside the midfield to the midfield against against quality opposition, the Hawks and the Crows, and has put up 94.105 in Dream Team and 95.83 in Supercoach. Done absolutely nothing wrong. Is well underpriced. Has a low break even. You can buy him for an average of 70 for a price of 76 in Dream Team and about 90-odd in Supercoach. Actually, it's not a great Supercoach score, but certainly in Dream Team, he looks well underpriced to me, Molly.
Yeah, no, he is. And so, I mean, that's a consideration you've got. I mean, I know for myself, I think Beams is going to... You know, I had Beams in my side most of the preseason, and I only took him out when he didn't actually show up in the preseason NAB games or early, you know, round one was the only reason he wasn't in my side from the start.
Mm.
So, you know, it makes sense to get him in now. You know, he's playing a lot more time in the midfield, you know, with some of the injuries and the like. So, you know, Beams is definitely someone who's looking not only at top seven, but, you know, top two or three. So that's where I'm going with that. And with, you know, a couple of other trades that I've got a lot of cash in the bank. So it's not like I, you know, of course I could do with extra cash, but I don't need the extra cash as badly as I need the points. So at this stage, I think the safer option for me in my situation is Beams. But, I mean, if you're right near having no money left, then perhaps, and you've got a good forward line already, then maybe it is an opportunity to look at making a little extra cash and going to O'Keefe, who might be a little bit up and down, but, you know, he's going to play a lot of midfield and score some good points.
Mm. All right, on the Adelaide side of that game, Molly, Scott Thompson, he also looks slightly underpriced. He's priced at about 102 in a Dream Team and about, no, actually a lot more in Supercoach again. A lot more in Supercoach, but... look, I mean, the thing with Thompson, as I was saying before, you know, that midfield that had Thompson and Boyd and four Giants in it, that's just way too overbalanced to round 11 by centres. And I feel like this is the reason why, I mean, if you're looking for round 11 centre, I think a lot of people are going Boyd. I mean, there was a analysis of the top 50 Dream Team coaches in made in a thread on Big Footy. I think it was yesterday they started that one. And there was a lot of Boyd in there. I'm not exactly sure why, but there certainly was a lot of Boyd, and not much Thompson. I feel like if you're looking for that round 11 upgrade, it is Boyd. Everyone seems to be going Boyd, and everyone seems to be forgetting Thompson. So, can you make a case for Thompson over Boyd? Because Boyd has put in a few less than. I mean, we mentioned that the GWS game. He has put in a couple of one or two less than impressive performances. Can you make a case for Thompson over Boyd?
Well, I mean, you can.
Because, I mean, you look at his numbers. It was, I mean, apart from that Hawthorn game where he scored a sub 60, all the rest of his numbers have been exemplary. You couldn't fault him.
Absolutely, and I mean that's the thing, isn't it? That, you know, he has got it. He's got a great run to end the season. So if you're thinking about finals, you know, he's your man. He's got, I mean, apart from the idea that if their run has been so good that they've got a confirmed position, he could get a rest. But I mean, looking at their last, you know, after the bye, I see the Cats and I see Essendon and I see Frio and I see a bunch of witch and West Coast. I'm not sure if I mentioned them, but a bunch of witches hats. Apart from that,
yes,
GWS, Gold Coast, Melbourne, Brisbane, Port. Although I mean, I guess for Adelaide, Port's a bit different than Port to other teams, but yeah, a lot of good games. So I mean, I've been looking at some of these premium round 11 guys, not for now, but in round 12 as you know, upgrade targets or sideways targets to cover the midfield. That's what I've been looking at with them, Rockliffe and Thompson. So I think that's where some value could come out of those guys.
I think I'd rather have Thompson than Rockliffe. I mean, even if I have to pay a bit extra, because I think the standard deviation with Thompson is going to be less. You might get the odd, you know, the odd game out, like obviously that Hawthorn game, but I think you're going to have a lot more of those with Rockliffe. You're going to have a very much a roller coaster ride of numbers.
Well, yeah, I mean, without doing the research, I mean, this year you do, but I have a funny feeling that Rockliffe was pretty solid last year. He seemed to, you know, watching Roy's side, he seemed to be scoring good points every week. So if he can return to that after the, you know, by the bye round or after the bye round, that would be fantastic.
Yep. All right, we'll move on to the Carlton Western Sydney game. Paul Bower, Molly, has, we basically poured a bucket of chook poo all over him in the pre-season, said he was no good, said he wasn't going to do anything. He had a good game in the round 2 game against the Lions, and had three pretty cod ordinary games around that, of, you know, sub-60s. But he's obviously missed that game against Frio, and of course, with Laidler out, he's come back for the GWS and peeled off a 116 in Dream Team and a 122 in Supercoach, which has made all of the previous ordinariness look much better than it was. And his average is now 72 from 5 games out of possible 6. He's gained 103,000 in Dream Team and 114,000 in Supercoach. Break even of single figures in both, 3 in Dream Team and minus 7 in Supercoach. How were we wrong here, Molly? Was it just the fact that Laidler got injured and it was a fact of personnel? How did we get that one so wrong?
Yeah, I mean, I think we always knew he could score. It was more the job security we weren't sure about. And they've had a lot of injuries in that back line from mind. I mean, guys coming back and trying to cement themselves. So, Jamison's been out a bit and now Laidler and Dygan was out for a few. So I think it was more the job security where we questioned him. And you know, his two scores have come against really poor opposition. So the other three games are just okay, and I mean that would have been fine for him for, you know, his break even from his starting price. But yeah, I mean it's sort of almost a non-issue because you've missed him, you've either got him and you're happy, or you've missed him and you know, you're crying into your soup over it if it's really worried you. But I mean, I don't think it's that serious.
Indeed. All right. I mean, I've liked him in previous years, but I didn't like him this year. But that's certainly one that we missed if people were taking our advice, which of course I would not advise doing. Don't take our advice. Just do what we. Hang on, what was it? What did we always say? Do what we say, not what we do. Yes. Not sure about that. Anyway, also Carlton now, Matthew Kruse owners this week, Molly, were. I think the phrase is kissed on the head by the fact that Kruse was named out and then brought back in, of course, with Warnock's injury. But I believe there were some comments by one of the coaches, if not Ratten himself, this week, that Kruse is going to be managed and is going to... I mean, I think the implication, I don't think it was actually made explicit, but the implication certainly is he's going to miss a game or two fairly soon. So those of his owners who, maybe have a trade to spare and maybe are getting a bit skittish about this sort of thing, I think you just eat that donut, and you know, if it comes, then well and good, and then you eat the donut, and that's all you do. Because I just did not want to spend any trades in that ruck contingent this year. I mean, obviously, unless Giles goes down, but certainly for the number one ruck, I don't want to have to trade. And if Cox, for instance, was out for a couple of weeks, I would eat two donuts. I suppose that's a decent question. How many donuts in your rucks would you be prepared to eat before you'd actually have to trade? Because I think one, no. Two, maybe. Three, definitely, yes.
Yeah, it's a tricky one. I mean, I traded to avoid a donut and ended up with that. David Hale in my rucks, and that's the way it's probably going to stay now, because I just have no level of confidence with any of the rucks. And I don't want to have two guys with a round 11 bye. So, you know, it's going to be ride that out. So, you know, if you've got Cruiser, just hang on to him and hope that he puts up some good scores and doesn't miss too many games. I mean, maybe around the bye rounds, you can think about it. Maybe in round 12, you know, if you don't have Cox, maybe that's the time to pick him up. We'll get to see what he's going to do from now on, as far as Nick Nat, who, you know...
Don't go too early. We'll talk about those guys afterwards, but yeah. I agree. All right, well, on the Western City side, of course, as usual, a lot of players to talk about here. Now, we haven't gone through a whole lot of bubble players this week, because I think the only two decent... I think we've talked about Spur, obviously, but I think the only two decent... meaningful trade-in targets are Horsley, of course, who was you know, not worth talking about. But, of course, the other one, which is obviously a lot more contentious, is Taylor Adams. Now, I feel like he is also a lock. I like the look of him. I like the fact that he's, you know, built like a Sherman tank. I like the fact that he looks like he's got a lot of strength, and he's not going to get buffeted and not going to get knocks like a lot of these young blokes do. I certainly like the fact that he scored 90 in both competitions. That's certainly pretty good. I feel like he was actually mentioned in the draft coverage at the AFL draft as being a future leader. So I like everything about Taylor Adams from a fantasy perspective, and I think he is someone who you almost have to. I mean, you have to have a pretty good structural reason not to get him in this week, despite the fact that, I mean, obviously. Coaches who are looking at buy structure are trying to get round 11 players out. I think in Adam's case, I think you can make an exception. I feel like if you're looking to get out the likes of Scheel or Kennedy, who was the other one? Yeah, so yeah, I think it's mainly Scheel and Kennedy. Devin Smith, of course, is the other one. I would feel comfortable if your structure, you know, allows you to, or you know, it makes sense to get either any of those three guys out for Adams this week, just to take the money and forget about the structure for a week. Are you on board with that one as well, Molly?
Oh, I mean, if you've got the opportunity to, yeah, he looks okay, he looks good. I guess his figures are sort of similar to what Kennedy did, and that sort of hasn't gone as well as we had first hoped. So, I mean, there's that issue there. But, yeah, no, I mean, I think there's the opportunity to trade him in now. I mean, even looking at the fact that he's a centre forward, you know, maybe it's a chance to get that link going between your forwards and your mids to, you know, perhaps work some things out during the bye weeks.
Yep, and just to round out the Western City talk, I think Liam Sumner, again, is another one who I would like to have. I think I'm probably going to be missing out on him because obviously making trades elsewhere. I do think he's going to be worthwhile. Maybe if you don't like the look of Adams, you might want to wait for Sumner. Maybe you're making two extra trades elsewhere because obviously injuries or what have you, structural issues. I don't necessarily see a bad thing. If you only get one of those guys, I think you do have to get one of Adams or Sumner. I wouldn't necessarily think that there's much difference between them. Obviously, Adams had a better score this week, but I can certainly see the quality in Sumner. I think he will play a small forward role. I'm not sure he's going to necessarily be the sort of Danny Stanley type of scorer, but you can certainly see the quality there. But then again, of course, I saw the quality in Will Hoskin-Elliott, and he's been a terrible fantasy player. So perhaps you can give me... I mean, am I liking Sumner too much, Molly, or am I seeing something that's not there?
Yeah, as you say, I mean, I think there's other options this week, which is probably the biggest thing against him. So, and I mean, it's only his first game, so we got another week to look at him against the Gold Coast.
Yeah, this is what I'm saying. I mean, Adam's on the bubble this week, some the next week. So, I think maybe, I mean, I think it's necessary to get one of those guys, but maybe due to yeah. other issues with the structure, then maybe you can wait a week on Sumner.
Right, yeah, true. And, I mean, if it come down to a straight between the two, you'd probably go Adams for the dual eligibility. But, yeah, I mean, perhaps Sumner will get another look at him and see if he, you know, if he can put up a nice score and be an option.
Now, just before we get off the I did mention Kennedy there. So I gave him the wall icon this week, not necessarily because he's, you know, hit the wall physically, but certainly from a fantasy scoring perspective, 40 in both competitions, that has pretty much curtailed his fantasy cash production. So, I mean, would you feel comfortable with taking him out this week, given, of course, that we thought the same thing about Devin Smith last week? Do you think Kennedy can, you know, pull another Devin Smith-like performance and restart his cash generation with a good performance against Gold Coast this week?
Yeah, no, he definitely could. He's sort of one of those guys I'm thinking that I'm going to hang on to and could possibly become my ninth back forward at the moment. So he's a guy who's got some job security, so that could be very helpful, as you say, come the buy round.
Very much so, yes. Especially those of us who've got the likes of Dixon and Hall in our forwards. Not a nice prospect. Although, I mean, I have the sneaking suspicion that we're going to see one, if not both, of those guys this week. So there's going to be a bit of good news, I think, in the future for fantasy coaches, owners of those two guys. Now, the Port Adelaide-Richmond game, a terrible game, this Molly, especially if you're a Power supporter. I mean, if you're a Richmond supporter, loved it. It was great but for them, but from a neutral perspective, it was a terrible game because Port just did not show up. Now, the fantasy relevance, a couple of issues here, well, I suppose the main issue here is Jared Redden. Doesn't look like he's going to get into that side anytime soon because, of course, former Hawthorn Premiership ruckman Molly Brent Renouf looked pretty good and, you know, kicked, you know, he had a fair few shots on goal. He ran forward and, you know, presented as a target. He looked pretty good, and I think he's going to be keeping Redden out of that side for the foreseeable future, Molly. So that's a bit of a bad thing for those, especially for those of us who are relying on Redden getting in back in for the bye rounds.
Yeah, I mean, that's all true. I mean, the word also is that Lobie's resumed at Sample level, so it's going to be hard for Redden to get back into that side. I mean, unless, you know, the axe is swung after what's probably considered a poor performance. You couldn't see him getting back in. It's a bit like McCauley was last year. It's just he's had a couple of good games, but the big guys have come back now, and it's going to be hard for him to get back in.
Speaking of the axe swinging, Molly, Darren Pfeiffer, of course, he was named the sub in that game, came on in the just at the end of the first quarter, and you think and his owners might have been thinking, well, all right, you know, he's going to be play three quarters, you know, you probably get a decent score. No, 26 in Dream Team and 30 in Supercoach looked terrible. Did not get into the game at all. Is Pfeiffer startable under any circumstances? I mean, assuming that, you know, maybe it's a Friday night game, you know, he's not going to be the sub. He looks like he's going to get dropped this week. Even if he does survive that cull, I can't see him being at all startable, can you?
No, he's not. I mean, he's rookie price, so you couldn't have expected too much, but yeah, no, I don't think, you know, not a lot of value in him at all, and I would hope not too many would have him.
Yes, and especially, you know, leading up to those buys, it'd be a big shame if you brought him in last week and then have to trade him out again, or you know, or obviously, yeah. if you have to eat a donut or two, you know, through the buy, that's going to be a poor result. Now, on the Richmond side, Molly, I think Ellis is... this is Brandon Ellis we're talking about here. Now, obviously, we keep on going back to Brandon Ellis and Stephen Morris because they are the two most fantasy-relevant players. I mean, obviously, everyone who has Deledio Martin, going to keep him there. There's nothing to be said really much there. But, of course, I believe Ellis's break-even in both competitions is about where his average is. 57, and he's actually averaging 56.7 in Dream Team, a little bit better in Supercoach, averaging much about the same, but his break-even is 38. He's earned, you know, 116 and 123 in both competitions. I feel like this is the week to get rid of him. Obviously, we've got a few possible sideways trade targets, you know, the likes of Smets, as we said, and Spur, obviously, who's not on the bubble, but I feel like people might want to get him anyway. I felt like at the start of the season Ellis was going to be the better scorer, but it has turned out that they're much of a muchness, both of these two guys, and they, you know, one of them might be up and one of them might be down from week to week. So I think Ellis has got the better job security, and that is, I think, why people are going to be keeping him, apart from obviously the break even issue. But I certainly think it's not a bad decision to keep Morris and trade Ellis and take the money and run this week, Molly.
Yeah, well, I mean, Alice has also sort of risen to the higher price quicker. So, yeah, I agree with some of that. I thought Morris was capable of being the better player and scoring better. So I think it always looked pretty line ball. So, yeah, I mean, if you've got a trade spare this week and you can do it, then, you know, moving Alice on could make you a lot of money and you know, it's sort of that time. But then again, I'm not too worried about holding them as well. They're going to sort of bounce around 40 to 60. Maybe they'll have a breakout game at some point, but, you know, it's not seeing it at the moment. Yeah, I mean, I could see holding those guys towards the bye rounds as well.
Yep. All right, and finally, the West Coast and North Melbourne game. Obviously, the owners of Dean Cox enjoyed the fact that Nick Nat knew he had pulled out late with a hamstring, which, of course, meant that Cox was rucking on his own. I mean, obviously, the Cox owners are going to be enjoying that. And if you're in a position where you need to, upgrade a ruck, then obviously Cox would be the number one target, I would imagine, if you're in that position. But I guess the question is about Nat Nui, Molly, because I think I might have heard even of someone who traded from Cruiser to Nat Nui to avoid the donut this week. That poor bastard is Mungrel. That poor Mungrel, I said, this is being a family show. That poor Mungrel is a very unlucky person for having to for wasting a trade on that. But I guess Nat Nui owners, of which I'm not sure there's a huge amount, but Nat Nui owners, I think there was talk about, you know, the fact that it is a hamstring, and, you know, hamstring tightness does it tend to turn into a 3-week hamstring injury. So if you have Nat Nui and you're expecting him to maybe, I mean, he might sort of get named, or he might not even get named this week. They might sort of have him out with that hamstring. Can you assume that it's going to be a 2-week hamstring, or is it going to be a 3-week hamstring? How many of those donuts are you going to eat from Nat Nui before you trade him out?
Well, I mean, the good thing is you probably wore one without even knowing you're going to wear it, so it's only probably one or two more you'll be looking at. So I think it'll depend on if there's any sign of Orange Stevenson, as, you know, I don't think we'll see Redden unless something happens that we can't predict. Mm. So, you know, I think it's a tough call. I mean, I think the instability in the rucks means for me, I wouldn't be trading him out at this point if I had him.
Yes, West had a pretty poor game last week, so he certainly got beaten by Jamar. Getting back to Melbourne, I mean, you know, Jamar's been averaging 38 hit-outs, so he's certainly been getting a lot of hit-outs, but Melbourne haven't been dominating the clearances, so maybe that was not necessarily such a bad thing for West's job security. And finally, on the North Melbourne side, Molly, I'm just struggling, as usual, to find relevant players from North Melbourne to talk about. I heard a lot of, it must have been three or four times they must have banged on about Scott Thompson and being the number one marker, intercept marker of opposition kicks last year, and certainly this year as well. Supercoach score of 104 as opposed to his dream team of 89. He is actually moderately Supercoach relevant, Molly. 95 average this year. After his price going down for a couple of weeks, is back above his starting price of, what would that have been, about 460. So he is currently priced at about 93 averaging 95 with 2 tons, and I think obviously he was injured. He came back from injury after round 3, I believe. 57 in that first game against the Cats, but some very startable scores in the 3 games afterwards, including tons against the Swans and the Eagles, you know, sides who you would normally not expect backmen to score well against. So, again, the North draw opens up a bit after this. The Dogs, the Port, Lions, Hawthorn, the Bye, Gold Coast, the Crows, St Kilda, and then the Eagles again. Gets a bit hairier towards the third third, but this middle third of the season, I could see Thompson taking a lot of those intercept marks and having a decent run. This is one of those players who I really should not be talking about, Molly. We're sort of scraping the bottom of the barrel here, but this guy would be highly, highly unique. Can you see any justification for me even talking about Scott Thompson, or am I up the wrong tree there?
No, well, I mean, I think as a super coach player, there's some merit in it, as you pointed out with the marks and the likes. And, you know, they've been in a lot of these games so far and had some tough opponents that they've done reasonably well against. He could get some big moment points in the other games now, maybe even, you know, some sort of own, he's got the scores on the board in a couple of games. And I mean, 104 against West Coast with their, you know, even though they've got a few out, their tall forward line, that's a pretty good performance.
I feel like, I mean, we've had some fantasy premiums in the North Melbourne half-back line previously. I mean, Pratt was an obvious one. Rawlings did okay there a couple of years ago. And I feel like, you know, obviously those two guys have retired, and I think it's actually Thompson who's sort of moving into that role. I mean, Sam Wright has been taking lockdown small forward roles. Scott Thompson is taking the third tall, and he is trying to be that link man out of defence. I'm not sure he's got the tank necessarily to do it, but he certainly has the willingness to run to position and take those, plus six marks out of defence. I'm not sure he's doing enough of it, but certainly in Supercoach he's delivering some decent scores. I'm not sure, again, whether he's going to be able to keep that up for the whole season, but if he keeps on averaging 95 for the rest of the season, given his price at the moment, that's going to be decent. So, again, it's a bit of a long shot, but certainly I'll throw it up there and see if anyone actually bites on that one. But anyway, that concludes the round review, and that pretty much concludes the show, Molly. We've gone another 90-minute extravaganza. So, yes, we can't thank the people on the chat, because there was no chat this week. We shall hope that Ustream is going to be up next week for the show as normal at 10:30 on a Wednesday. This show, of course, will be up on iTunes, and, of course, you know, if you... That's the only way, pretty much the only way you can get it, apart from, of course, on the Coach's Box or Fan Footy websites. Do you put links up on your AFL? Now remind me what your
sites normally were. Put links to the back
AFL
to the,
Space
to the
AFLSpace.com is what.
Yeah, normally put links back to it. So yeah, indeed. You can get it there as well.
Indeed. Well, as I said, that is it for the Coach's Box for this week, and we shall see you guys next week, hopefully with a live show.
See you all then.